So the story I'm going to tell this evening is a story of Kisa Gotami. And then what I'd like to do after telling the story is for you all to break into little groups of maybe four or so and discuss the story amongst yourselves. So how you reacted to the story, and things you see in the story, and how maybe it relates personally to you, this kind of story. So that's my proposal. And some people don't like to come to a sitting group like this and then be involved in some discussion. You're welcome not to join a group and just sit quietly, or you're welcome at that point to leave if that's most comfortable for you. But there's a lot of benefit from getting to know other people who are doing the same practice as you, and also a lot of benefit, I think, in exploring the meaning and the impact of a story like this amongst yourselves, rather than getting, you know, my interpretation or my take on it. It probably goes deeper, the story, if you're listening to it in a way that you have to personalize it in order to talk about it. So that's my proposal. Is that okay? Okay. So Kisa Gotami. Kisa was a daughter of very poor Indian parents, kind of the lowest class in ancient India, very poor, and at some point her parents died. And she was very lean or haggard looking, and that's how she got her name, Kisa. Kisa means lean or haggard. And she had a kind of a nickname, which was somewhat or pretty derogatory at the time, called the daughter of nobody. In ancient India, you were somebody partly in your relationship to other people, to your parents or your son or something, your clan, your family, and she was the daughter of nobody. But somehow she managed to get married to a man who belonged to a somewhat wealthy family. Well-to-do than she was. But as is sometimes the custom in ancient Indian families, the bride that enters the family of the groom is treated pretty poorly, and kind of at the bottom of the social hierarchy in the family, and treated pretty almost like a slave at times. She gave birth to a son, and which raises the status of a woman very quickly in ancient India. And her son, suddenly she had a position in the family. She was the mother of the grandson, the mother of the son. And so this was, quite an improvement in her status, in her lot, and in her degree of happiness that she had, and respect she got. And at some point her husband died. And so she didn't have that relationship anymore, kind of as a cushion between her and her in-laws. But she still was the mother of this son. And so her status, again, was very much dependent on the son. And then at some point, her son got sick. And she went around trying to get medicine for him and trying to care for him. Was quite worried, distraught about her son being sick for all the different reasons that the mother might be distraught. And at some point, her son died. And she was then became distraught, almost deranged from this. And she picked up her young son and bundled him up and started carrying him to the different houses in the village, knocking on the doors and asking people for medicine. She'd say, "My son is so sick. He needs some medicine so that he can live. Do you have any medicine for him?" And at first, people would react, you know, somewhat positively. "Oh, well, maybe I have something for you," or they feel some sympathy, until they looked down at what she was holding in her arms and realized it was not a sick child. This was obviously a dead child that she was carrying, a corpse. And they would treat her in various ways. Some people would close the door on her in contempt. Some people would have great sympathy, but they would say to her, "You know, we can't do anything for you. There's no medicine to cure your child. The child's dead." And she would say, "No, no, no, he's alive. I just need the right medicine, and he'll be all okay." And finally she came to a house where the same thing happened again. But these people saw her quite deranged position, and they said to her, "There's only one person who can help you, who has medicine for you. Go talk to the Buddha." So she felt very hopeful that finally someone had pointed her in a direction where there could be help. And she went and found the Buddha. It was obviously that she was quite deranged, quite out of it kind of in many ways, and not accepting of the fact that her son was dead. And she came to the Buddha and said the same thing. "You know, I have this, my son is quite sick. He needs some medicine, otherwise he'll die. And I've been told that you have some medicine." And the Buddha said, "Indeed, I have some medicine for you." And the people around the Buddha thought this was a little bit odd, because the Buddha was committed to being truthful, and they didn't think the Buddha had the power or the medicine to bring someone back from death. But the Buddha said, "I have some medicine for you. And you have to go into town and get some mustard seeds." And she felt very hopeful then, because mustard seed was one of the most common condiments in Indian cuisines. Everyone had mustard seeds that were very cheap, relatively cheap, I guess. And she thought that was easy to get, that was the medicine. And then the Buddha said, "However, you must only get the mustard seed from a house where no one has died." So she left with great hope and went to the first house and asked if she could have some mustard seed as a medicine for her son, who's still carrying. And the first person said, yeah, "I have mustard seed. I'm happy to give you mustard seed." And then Kisa said, "Oh, but before you do that, let me ask you, has anyone died in this house?" And the person said, "Oh, of course. We've been here for many generations, and just a few months ago, my father died, and before that, we had two stillborn babies in the house, and, you know, just been, you know, went through the list of going back over the last years of all the people who died." So she went to the next house and knocked and asked again. She asked, "Has anyone in this house died?" And they said, "Yes." And they went through a list of their own. The third house, same thing. And she went through, and slowly, you know, it started having an impact on her. Maybe first feeling somewhat despair that she wasn't successful in finding a house with no death. But by the time she got to the end of the town, into the village, and knocked on all the doors, she realized that death is universal. That every house has been visited by death. Death happens to everyone. And then she realized that her own condition, or the death of her own son, was part of the impermanent flow of life and death. And there was some kind of acceptance then. She was finally willing to accept the fact that her son was dead. Until then, she hadn't been willing to accept that. So she took her son to the cemetery, and then she went back to the Buddha, and the Buddha said something like, "Did you find the medicine?" And she said, "Yes, I found the medicine that you had for me, and I would like to become now a disciple of the Buddha. I'd like to become ordained as a nun." And so then the Buddha ordained her, and then in her very open state, kind of very open, kind of maybe vulnerable or very receptive mode, the Buddha then kind of said the following verse, which then enlightened her to the first stage of enlightenment. And the verse was something like, "Those who center their hearts on children and possessions will be swept away like a sleeping village in a great flood." Those who center their hearts on children and possessions will be swept away like a sleeping village by a great flood. And then she continued her life as a Buddhist nun, which made her once again a mendicant, going to people's doors. Before, she went desperately, but as a mendicant she went calmly, serenely, as a beggar in a sense. And bhikshu in Buddhism, a bhikshuni, comes from the word to beg, a mendicant going around receiving alms to support her life. But now a liberated person. So that's a story. It comes from an ancient collection of texts called the Terigata, which is a remarkable collection because it's the oldest, probably, it's been said, the oldest body of women's literature, of women's story, of women's women's lives, women's biographies, that talks about women's religious experiences in the history of humankind. And she's in the story of Kisa Gotami is in this book, and that's her story. So what do you think of that? So why don't you form little groups of about four, and maybe take turns talking, so it's not all at once, and see what comes out of that kind of discussion. And then at some point near, in maybe about 15-20 minutes, we'll ring a bell, and then we can gather together again for a few minutes of closing. So please.